Today's program is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit rt11.com.
I'm Linda Pelaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. Welcome to Inside School Food. I'm your host, Laura Stanley, and this is our last episode for January 2015. It's pretty cold here in New York. We're expecting a blizzard here shortly. But today we're going to Minnesota, where I think it's probably a lot colder. We're making a return visit to Minneapolis Public Schools. We first heard about MPS on the pilot episode back in May when Culinary and Nutrition Services Director Bertrand Weber joined me as one of our first guests on our pilot episode. At that time, I promised Bertrand and all of you that we'd be back for more. So we've got him on the line today, along with MPS Executive Chef and Operations Manager Ricardo Abbott. The two of them are going to be talking about their district's ambitious kitchen build-out, with which a lot of people working in school food are watching with great interest and excitement. They've made a targeted acquisition of some major pieces of equipment, a few of which are not typical in K-12 food service. This is enabling MPS to move very swiftly away from what was a totally pre-pack operation to one that will someday be entirely self-sufficient. All food prepared fresh in-house. That's the goal. So get ready to get geeky. We're going to be talking about cook, chill, vacuum packing, slicing and shredding, and sous vide cookery in a 30-foot long tank, and whatever else we have time for. There's a whole lot. So a little bit about our guests. Ricardo is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America with a long career history in food service, including a number of years in resort hotels in Florida and a major Minnesota hospital, which is how he comes by his knowledge and his enthusiasm for big equipment with big potential. Bertrand has more than 35 years of combined management experience in the hospitality industry and school food service in his native Switzerland and here in the U.S. And if you're active in school food, you know that Bertrand was first recognized as a force of nature for his work in the Hopkins, Minnesota schools. He's only in his third year at MPS, but as you're going to hear today, he's moved the district forward at a pretty astonishing pace. Under his watch, MPS has gone from 0 to 60 with bold stroke thinking, driving innovation across the system in Whole Foods, farm-to-school purchasing, marketing to students in the community, and involving not-for-profit partners in the community in the change process. Bertrand and his team are so ahead of the curve in so many regards that I sometimes wish I could do a spin-off podcast series called Inside Minneapolis School Food. So, Ricardo and Bertrand, welcome to Inside School Food.
Good morning.
Hello, Laura.
Just tell me, how cold is it in Minneapolis today?
It is 40 degrees.
No.
An inch of snow on the ground.
Well, it's colder here. We're getting a blizzard. So, okay, I got that wrong. Okay.
We're completely upside down this year.
Got
it. Where we would typically be in the mid-teens with sub-zero at night.
All right.
We had an early blast of winter in November, and now we're really in the middle of a January thaw.
Well, enjoy it. I want to start out today with a brief summary, Bertrand, with what you shared with us back in May about your district. MPS is big. You've got 36,000 students. And when you began there, it was nearly 100% prepack with virtually no food prepared in either the central kitchen or in the school kitchens. And that's because starting in the 70s, the schools were built with no kitchens, just warming ovens. not even sinks. And your food service workers didn't need them because they weren't called upon to actually touch any food. And Bertrand, you told me that you had a local reporter visit your central kitchen during your first week in the job in Minneapolis, and she printed a rather unflattering comment about your kitchen. What did she say?
She referred to the nutrition center as where food goes to die.
Ouch. Okay. And what was she seeing that led to that?
You know, she's a pretty, she's really a wonderful reporter, but what she was referring to is really the nutrition center, although Ricardo had started to make a few changes, but for the most part, the only thing that came into the nutrition center was really food that was fully processed, fully cooked. And so she was kind of referring to as, you know, where food is reassembled to be sent out, and mm-hmm. even the best of intention, really, the prepack model does not do justice to even when you try to do better food. So
Right. She
was saying you can take good food, you put it in prepack, and it dies.
Right. So if she were to visit the same facility today, what would she see and what would she smell?
I think that the main difference, and it's even to me amazing, is that when I walk in the morning, you have food smell, which 3 years ago was pretty much non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
I remember even taking Ricardo and some of the other staff and walking in the building and say, what do you see? What do you smell? And there was nothing. It was really a very sterile kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Where now, on any given day, there's wonderful smells that come out of the rebirth of the central kitchen. And that is really, you know, can be attributed to Ricardo and his staff and some very creative way of cooking and making. We did for the first time last week, and I don't have the quantities, but mm-hmm. it was rather large, whole muscle beef stew with carrots and potatoes and peas, and that would have never happened back then. So
that would be really delicious in New York today. So I want to look at your menu today. We have the following. You're serving, this is in your high schools, chicken a la king with whole grain biscuits, Italian baked pasta, and a hot chicken teriyaki sub. Tomorrow I'm looking at a choice of roasted ranch chicken with a five rice blend and baked butternut squash, a turkey burrito bowl with whole grain tortilla and black beans, or a fish sandwich on a whole grain bun. It sounds so good. And I've also watched videos of your meals and your salad bars on your website, and they just look amazing. So big change. So I want to talk about whatever's going on the back of the house that makes this kind of meal service possible in such a short time. And of course, pieces of equipment in particular. So Ricardo, let's start, you know, let's look at a few pieces. We'll start with one. Okay, so one piece of equipment that you have now that you didn't have in 2012. You want to start with the shredding machine, which I've never heard of before. You told me about it.
Well, a shredding machine is nothing else than a machine that when you cook, for example, a pork roast, it will actually shred it for you and to look like a hand pull.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you don't have to do it by hand, and we can do as many more roast. And basically what it does is it helps us with our labor here. We can do more with less.
Right. And you told me that a shredding machine for meat is kind of unusual in schools.
I will say so because I don't even remember when I used to work in hotels. I never had one.
Right.
But it's more. I think it's more where the manufacturing food manufacturing place will have it.
Right. So, and that's something that we're going to be talking about a lot going forward. Is both of you have said to me that your facility, now that you've invested in all this equipment, is looking more and more like a small processing plant. Another piece of equipment that I spoke about with your farm-to-school coordinator, Andrea Northrup, she was really excited to tell me about something called a gentle mixer, which also I'd never heard of. What is a gentle mixer?
What it does is it helps us. We make a lot of salads here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Composed salads, like, for example, it will be like a broccoli salad with a yogurt dressing and cram cherries, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to put that in a regular mixer, it will shred the product into pieces where it'll be very hard to recognize that it was broccoli, for example.
Right.
So a gentle mixer, what it does is it helps us do huge amounts of different salads without shredding it and making it unrecognizable. So basically, we do a lot of bean salads. We make a lot of grain salads. And a lot of salads, bean salads, vegetable salads, have a lot of ingredients that you want to be able to distinguish, and so consistency is great. So nothing else, it just helps us move huge amounts of salads and instead of having to do it by hand.
Right. What Andrea said was it does the work of many staff people working, you know, manually with you know, rubber gloves on. And she said that having that piece of equipment has really transformed her ability to do more farm-to-school purchasing, because she knows she can buy for a certain date and you can process it really quickly for, you know, this huge number of children. So, and again, a gentle mixer is typically not found in schools, right?
No, it is not. And it's been a blessing having it because of a help us with the consistency of the product. You know, like everything else, food has got to look good so people eat it.
Right, right.
Starts with the eyes, you know. So, it's just a wonderful piece of equipment, and it allows us to send grain salads and legume salads, vegetable salads up to the schools, where they're placed on the salad bars.
Right. Now, you know, this is radio, so it's really hard for people to envision these things. But, you know, what we're talking about, like, they're really huge, right? Like, what does your gentle mixer look like?
It will look like, a huge pot that has got an auger in the middle. And
mm-hmm.
it goes very slow.
Yeah.
And then it actually can go both ways, reverse and forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, when you move your product, you can get an even coating.
Right, right. And then you also use cook chill tanks, which I think are more familiar in bigger districts. And you had them even before Bertrand came on. How are you using them? And what are they, too, just for those listeners who aren't familiar?
Before Bertrand started here, the only thing we were making here was gravies.
Mm-hmm.
The principle of cook and chill is that whatever you're going to cook, you're going to have to chill it quick within your, you know, danger zone HACCP regulations. So we had a chill tank here, which now it runs every single day. Like today, we're making beef stew. When Bertrand was talking about that we had made a whole mass of beef stew, we're making 1,600 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
So when you make that huge amount, 1,600 gallons, you have to be able to cook it, okay? I mean, chill it.
Right, right.
So now we use it for, we have become a big cook and chill facility. So everything we cook, we chill.
Right, right.
And that's where our cook and chill tank comes it is so handy for us.
Right. And so stuff that's being made in the central kitchen is being shipped out to all your schools, your high schools, your middle schools, and your elementary schools?
That is correct.
Right.
So I will say we make pizza sauce. We make marinara sauce. We make sweet and sour sauce. We make any sauce that we use within Minneapolis Public Schools is made here.
Right.
We
right.
also make, for example, the chicken curry. We'll make a stew. Like today, we're making chicken chow mein. We make chili. All those products, spaghetti sauce and meat sauce, you know, products like that. So once we make them in here, we buy them at about 165 degrees. So we can get the product pasteurized, and then we will chill it within, I will say, way within 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We chill about 200 gallons every 2 hours.
Right, right. So, Bertrand, both you and Ricardo have talked to me about your concern about industrial additives in food, and this is really part of what's driving your interest in doing everything in-house. You actually do have a list of what you call ingredients of concern that you're trying to phase out. How is all this scratch cooking helping that move along quickly?
Well, when you're making your own recipes, basically you have control of what goes in the recipe. And everything we make here, we are very choosy and picky of what products we're going to cook. So we try to have a clean recipe that doesn't have dyes, doesn't have a lot of fat. We control the fat. We control the preservatives, and because there are none. So it makes for a very clean label for the kids. I believe not only the products are concerned, but also, you know, making a recipe from scratch is a lot cheaper than buying processed food.
Right, right. So, go ahead, Richard.
If I may jump in really briefly here to kind of reiterate what Ricardo was saying is, you know, unfortunately within our society and fast food, not just fast food, but just processed food and food of convenience, we've exposed, you know, our children and us in general to a lot of ingredients that really were not found in food 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the advance of process and convenience food really, unfortunately, has taken what could have been some really nice, healthy product and made them into not so healthy for our bodies because of the addition of so many chemicals. We were looking, for example, at a chicken drumstick that we sourced from a large chicken producer, and it literally had over 50 ingredients on it, where all we wanted was a drumstick.
Right.
And we have been able now, through a lot of work, even outside the district, to source a pre-cooked chicken drumstick for some of our schools that still don't have kitchen, that literally has three ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So what Ricardo is saying is, I don't need a 30-day shelf life on a product. We're making it fresh today for consumption within the next couple of days, which allows us to eliminate a lot of chemicals and additives that you find even in some of the best convenience food that's on the market, either for schools or for the general public as a whole.
Yeah.
So that has, I think, has making a big impact on children's health, but it's also on their behavior. We've eliminated all the dyes. There's not a single food that we serve that has any added colors to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one by one, we're removing other chemicals as well. There is no artificial sweetener whatsoever in anything we serve. And Ricardo, you know, his ability to use some of those new tools or new cooking equipment. Sometimes it's like he's like a kid in a candy store. Every time we get We just got a new bagging machine, which now allows us to, for example, bag the stew meat with the exact portion, and that's written on the bag, and that can go to the high schools. So it's fresh, and then it's sent there. But really, I think the equipment and cooking from scratch eliminates all of the ingredients of concern, which goes out every time we look for a new product. People are aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as Ricardo also said, ironically, fresh food is less expensive. And I know it's hard to understand that concept.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that.
Fresh food is less expensive.
Right, right. So as long as you brought that up, Bertrand, we'll skip ahead to that question. I wanted to talk about your food and your labor costs. I mean, how has your kitchen build-out affected you in this area? Because there's possibly no other kind of laboratory in the country that kind of illustrates it, because you went so quickly from total prepack and you're moving so quickly to total scratch cook. So how does it compare from then to now?
Comparing from a food cost perspective?
Yeah,
or just...
yeah, food. Let's start with food, yeah.
So there's a couple of things I think that we need to highlight. One is we have gone from prepack and IW, or individually wrapped portions of fruits and vegetables, to we now have our 7 high schools, 4 junior high, and 5 elementaries that do either full scratch at site or modified scratch at site. But we also have added 42 schools with full salad bars.
Mm-hmm.
So the individually wrapped fruits and vegetable has gone away. We have new regulations that mandate higher consumptions of fresh fruits and vegetables, and we've gone all fresh. The net effect on our food costs, actually, where this year we budgeted a 42% food cost, and through last month we were at 39% food cost. Where it used to be under the prepack, labor was substantially lower, mm-hmm. but the food cost was higher. Food cost was around 45%.
Mm-hmm.
So it does require more ongoing monitoring of your food costs because you have so many more variables.
Mm-hmm.
But by combining fresh food, commodities, able to provide a much larger array of fresh fruits and vegetables on the salad bar, our costs have actually come down by a percentage or so.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I know you've also made an effort to look systematically at packaging waste. And how has that changed over the last 3 years?
That's still an ongoing frustration, I think, that we have as when we go to a school that's still on prepack. But mm-hmm. I think 3 years ago, our packaging cost was close to $800,000. Now the cost has not changed drastically because as we move a school into on-site cooking, until we can have the full renovation taking place, we still don't have dishwashers. So we've shifted from the prepack at the nutrition center to a compostable lunch tray at the school. So we're still spending a lot of money on disposables,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But the district has committed $45 million for the next 4 years for kitchen renovations. We'll be doing 10 over the summer, and we are adding dishwashers to all schools so that we can get away from disposable to durable ware.
Right, right. Now, the things you're talking about, dishwashers, compostable disposables, disallowing industrial additives. I need to emphasize that none of this is the norm across the country. So it's pretty exciting. So we need to take a break, but I want to tell people you really need to stay listening, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the most exciting, at least to me, and I think possibly to Ricardo, the most exciting equipment invested you made, and that is a giant sous vide cooker. And if you don't know what a sous vide cooker is, I will ask Ricardo to explain. So stay with us. You're listening to Inside School Food, a special episode about big equipment purchases in Minneapolis public schools.
Today's break song called Pale Blue by The Landing. This is Heritage Radio Network. Following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. An incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
This is Inside School Food on the Heritage Radio Network. Today we're looking at shiny new huge kitchen workhorses that are transforming food service in Minneapolis public schools from 100% heat and serve prepack to what will someday be a 100% scratch cooked model. With 36,000 kids to feed, this calls for equipment purchasing that's not just big but forward thinking. So Chef Ricardo, what made me want to do this episode is this conversation we had about your sous vide cooker. Last year over the summer. You've got this giant piece of equipment. It's really unusual in schools, but I think we need to start by explaining to some of our listeners who don't know about sous vide cookery exactly what it is.
Well, sous vide technique is nothing else when you grab a piece of whole muscle meat and you season it or not, and then you put it in a vacuum pack machine and shrink pack it, and then put it on a in a pot of water and bring it up to your desired temperature, often as simmering, and cook it for a long period of time, and then pull it out, chill it, or eat it right after, often as chilled. And it comes out to be an extremely tender piece of meat, because once it is inside of a bag that is sealed in vacuum pack, you don't lose none of its moisture.
Right, right.
It doesn't evaporate. And steam out of the pot or out of the roasting pan.
Right.
So it's extremely tender.
It's extremely tender. I first heard about sous vide in regards to how it's used in fine dining restaurants. It's a small unit in a fancy restaurant where meat, as you say, is sealed up and cooked for a very long time at low heat. So you get this incredibly tender, completely moist, because nothing is lost outcome. But in your case, you told me that your sous vide cooker is, now get this, folks, 30 feet by 6 feet by 6 feet deep. You said it looks like a huge jacuzzi tank.
That is correct.
Yeah. And you also told me that so you're cooking these big pieces of meat, which are purchased through USDA food, so it's commodity product, and you're basically processing it yourself. So you're avoiding that step of diverting the product to the processor in your sous vide cooker. What was it you told me, that sometimes things cook for up to 25 hours very slowly? Is that right?
It could be dependent on the size of the meat. The bigger the roast is, the longer it takes to cook.
Remarkable.
So, for example, you know, what I wanted to do was take advantage of some of the products that we get through USDA commodities, like fresh hams and turkey roast and things like that. So, for example, our pork roast, I will go ahead and season it. Average, they're about 10 pounds. And like I said, I will go ahead and season them and put them in a bag and shrimp pack them. And I will put them in our cooking tank. Our cooking tank, what it does is it will start heating up and will get to a temperature that I will program into the machine. For example, I will cook this pork roast at about 190 degrees for about 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it gets to, it's got a prob, once it gets that, it will be in one of the bags. In that bag, it will be specially sealed different than the other ones. We will get to 190 degrees, and then the cold tank will become a chilling tank.
Right, right. So it chills it down too.
It as soon as the program tells it that the center of the meat got to be at 190, 195, it will shut down the cooking part of it, and it will start chilling.
Right. So it
and
does it all for you.
I will program it to stop chilling at around 40 degrees.
Right. Right.
So the same information goes into the computer that the tank has. And from 195 degrees, it'll start coming down to 40, and then it will stop, and then we'll pull the product out.
Right, right.
So shrinkage is almost non-existent.
That's pretty exciting. And the other thing you told me is that the water actually moves around the pork roast or the barbacoa or the turkey elking, whatever you're making, and sort of massages the bag of food without breaking it up. And my understanding, Ricardo, is this is, again, another piece of equipment, rare in schools, very rare, and something you're more familiar with from working in, you know, a casino setting or a hospital. So pretty cool. What are you cooking in it this month?
What's that?
What are you making? Well, like, what dishes are coming out of the sous vide cooker this month?
We are in a testing process still. We are testing, like I said, turkey roast right now and pork roast. The intent will be that as soon as we have all the testing done and we will be doing barbecue, we will be doing carnitas, we will be doing Cuban style and mojo sauce. So it could be used at our ethnic stations all over our high schools and middle schools.
Right, right. So, Bertrand, how has your staff been able to keep up with these changes? Some of the stuff that Ricardo's talking about just arrives in your elementary and middle school kitchens ready to go. So there's a lot that's kind of similar to the old days when they could just heat things up. But they still have got to learn how to handle this new equipment. How are you doing with bringing everybody up to speed with the very rapid changes?
So we've put in place a couple of things, and we sometimes forget that it is actually pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we've done is we've developed a couple of training sessions that is offered a couple times a year that concentrate. One was prep cook training class, one was kitchen management training class. We'll be offering actually new ones again coming soon for more on-site cooking sessions. And we also have ongoing through Ricardo and his two assistants. He has a sous chef that oversees the nutrition center, the bulk cooking, and then we have a culinary trainer, sous chef, that works with each site. So they conduct ongoing training for any new recipes. We just had one last week, actually, that explored some of the new recipes. So it's just an ongoing it's ongoing culinary training. Back in December, Ricardo actually did a new boot camp with some other district that we explored some of the new cooking technique as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just refocusing on culinary technique. One of Ricardo's goal between now and the end of the year, so we'll be fully. It'll be fully in place for next school year, is the development of full cooking or full kits for the school. So, for example, next week there is a Spanish rice that's being made at all of the on-site cooking. And he's sending them out a bag that has all of the ingredients in it, including the oil, the spices, and I don't remember all of the spices that's in there, but there's cumins, there's tomato paste, there's paprika and all of that. So that when it gets to the school, they open that bag and mix it with a certain amount of rice and water, and that's it. That's
ready
the only
go.
Step they have to do.
Right.
So
right.
It's fresh, but yet it minimizes the exposure at the site level.
That's
so
remarkable.
That's really the goal is to maximize the central kitchen, the freshness, the economies of scale by having one cook doing, for example, spaghetti sauce, because everybody's mother has the best, you know, spaghetti sauce. So
yeah.
and working on that. So it's the culinary training I think has been great, but also realizing that the more we can centralize at the central kitchen, the better it's going to be at all school level.
Right.
Ricardo will be starting doing. We will be starting doing our own dressing sometime this year. I don't have a date yet because we have so many things in place. But
So doing all of this, you know, kind of food processing in house is, of course, a luxury you have as a large district. So, you know, and I need to acknowledge that because many of our listeners are coming from smaller districts. But there are larger lessons to be drawn just about, you know, what's possible through scratch cooking and some of the things that you've done regarding getting a kind of standardization of recipes by doing things in bulk when possible and streamlining things. So it's really cool to hear. And I do want to add that you've got one big piece coming up, a new piece of equipment, a full-capacity conveyor oven is coming, and that thing is going to be probably bigger than the sous vide cooker, right?
So that one is that's still our dream purchase.
Okay.
I'm looking on the funding for that, and so. But if we do get that conveyor oven, yes, it will be larger than a sous vide.
yeah, pretty cool. Well, maybe we'll catch up with you when you get that. It's been great hearing about this, guys, and I'm really excited for you. I encourage listeners to check out Bertrand's May 5th appearance on Inside School Food, in which he spoke more specifically about participation and financial pressures that MPS is working under the new meal pattern. But on the whole, things are going well. Your participation is up. I know that. So that speaks to the power of whole food. You'll find a link to that episode on today's episode page on InsideSchoolFood.com. Additionally, I will be posting links that will get you to a whole lot more information about the very exciting stuff happening in school food in Minneapolis, including that terrific video I referred to earlier. So, Bertrand Weber, Culinary and Nutrition Services Director for Minneapolis Public Schools, thank you so much for joining us today. And Ricardo Abbott, Executive Chef and Operations Manager, many thanks to you. I'm looking forward to hearing about cool new recipes coming out of your sous vide cooker.
You have been
listening to Inside School Food on the Heritage Radio Network. All our episodes are archived in two places, InsideSchoolFood.com and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Better yet, you can upload the show to your mobile device via iTunes and Stitcher and take us with you. I'm Laura Stanley. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.